This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
Well, that's a pretty cool open, Taylor. This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, February 19, 2021. It's the first of our daily weekday podcasts that start today. Some special guests. But first, Taylor Schwenk producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut. I'm Buster Olney producing, hosting from my home studio just north of New York City. Did I say special guest today, Taylor? We got a pretty good lineup.
Yeah, I think so. Why don't you lay it out for the people at home, Buster? This is a big show.
Yeah, so it looks like we're going to have both World Series managers, Kevin Cash of the Tampa Bay Rays, Dave Roberts of the Los Angeles Dodgers, and how about Dr. Anthony Fauci, to ask him about the conditions in which spring training is starting and when we might expect that we're going to see fans in the stands. So pretty cool first day.
Oh, yeah, I'm pumped. This all kind of came together. Well, the Fauci thing we've had in our pocket for about a week now. And then we were like, let's get another one of the World Series managers on so they can talk about playing, you know, without fans and then with fans. So Kevin Cash dove head first when I asked the people at the Rays. You've been talking to people at the Dodgers, and woke up this morning to the hot email. Dave Roberts in. Let's go. I'm through the roof, man. I mean, this is a great way to start the season.
And we're also going to be talking with Aldin Gonzalez of ESPN about that monstrous Fernando Tatis Jr. contract that was agreed to the other day. 14 years, $340 million for a shortstop who's just 22 years old. There's a ton of opinion around baseball about this contract that I'm going to be talking with about Aldin. Here's Padres manager Jace Tingler about Fernando Tatis Jr.
Being around him, hearing the guys around him, I mean, you know, his work ethic, his drive to win. I think the easiest thing to see, you know, with him is his talent. You know, and that's on all aspects. You know, the way he runs, the way he moves, the way he can hit for power, hit all directions. The work ethic, seeing him consistently improve in a lot of areas of the game, certainly defensively, and then you know, the way he plays the game with just such a fun spirit. The way his teammates view him, the way he treats other people. You know, he's video in the Dominican. He's, you know, he's still wanting to play ball. He's working. You know, it just, he knows that there's areas that he wants to attack, and he continues to attack and work on. And those are some of the things that some of those guys that you mentioned, whether it's Jordan and, you know, watching The Last Dance and things like that, there's hopefully some very common themes there. There's great excitement, you know, around here.
Boy, that's a pretty good comparison when you're 22 and you're being compared to Michael Jordan. But that's where Fernando Tatis Jr. is. Bad news for the Philadelphia Phillies catcher JT Realmuto, who was re-signed this offseason to a five-year, $115.5 million contract, suffered a broken thumb. They expect him to miss about a month. They're still hopeful that he'll be ready for opening day. An odd situation, a weird situation developing around Domingo Germán, the Yankees pitcher. Of course, he missed all of last season, serving a suspension under baseball's domestic violence policy. He had a cryptic tweet the other day or on Instagram. Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, talked about him. It feels like a something that's going to continue to be talked about, the relationship between Domingo Germán and the Yankees as we move forward. The Cleveland Indians worked out a deal to bring back lefty Oliver Perez. Taiwan Walker agreed to a two-year deal with the New York Mets. The Oakland Athletics are making moves. They agreed to terms on a one-year, $11 million deal with closer Trevor Rosenthal, who steps into the shoes left behind by Liam Hendricks. They also agreed to a deal with designated hitter Mitch Moreland. The Mariners have signed reliever Ken Giles. Some players retiring. Brian Dozier, the longtime infielder, and reliever Cody Allen deciding that they're going to end their careers at the end of a disappointing offseason for a lot of free agents. And breaking news out of Indians camp yesterday, Shane Bieber, the Cy Young Award winner, has been slowed by COVID-19. He's not yet at the Indians training facility. So far, Chris Antonetti, head of baseball operations for the Indians, says that Bieber is suffering only mild symptoms. Now, before we get to Kevin Cash, to Dave Roberts, to Dr. Fauci, and to Aldin, two things I want to mention. First, when you gift a year of ESPN Plus, you're giving thousands of live events, exclusive originals, the full 30 for 30 library, and more. Surprise the sports fan in your life with a year of ESPN Plus. Visit ESPNPlus.com/giftayear for more details. And check out The Right Time with Bomani Jones every Tuesday and Thursday afternoon. On Thursday's episode, Bo talks with Slate's Joel Anderson, a fellow Texas native, about the winter weather wreaking havoc on the Lone Star State. Listen to The Right Time with Bomani Jones, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Dr. Anthony Fauci is director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the U.S. National Institutes of Health. And it is widely known, Dr. Fauci, that you are a huge baseball fan. Thanks for joining us. And before we talk about coronavirus and the connection with baseball in the current context, who was your favorite player when you were growing up, and what was your connection with that player?
Well, I grew up a long, long time ago. I played infield. I was a shortstop, so obviously I was a Yankee fan, so Phil Rizzuto was one of my favorite players, but really my favorite of all favorite players had to be Mickey Mantle. I mean, that was just, you know, magical when he would step to the plate. You were always waiting for that swing that would knock it out of Yankee Stadium, which he almost did once, but not quite. Right.
So what do you remember about the first time you walked into Yankee Stadium as a young boy?
Well, the first time I did was when I was really a young boy. It was, goodness, I was a child and my father took me, and I remember exactly where I was sitting. We were sitting in the right field stand, the left field stands. And that was one of the last games that Joe DiMaggio played because, you know, he had that heel injury that kind of put him out of action. But I remember being very impressed with that game because to be in the same ballpark with the great Joe DiMaggio and to see him play before he had to retire for his injuries. And as you know, right after that came my real hero was Mickey Mantle.
All right. As baseball gets ramped up again, within the pandemic context, what are the current conditions with COVID-19 in your eyes as spring training starts?
Well, first of all, Buster, it's a moving target. But the way it's moving now, if you look at the number of infections per day and you chart it, right now it's on a rather sharp decline. During the late fall, early winter, as we got into the colder weather, as we got into the holiday season, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year, where people congregated mostly indoors, some people not abiding by the public health measures of masks and physical distance, we had an enormous peak that went up to sometimes 300,000 to 400,000 infections per day. That has started to turn around, and it's coming down in a very sharp decline. That together with the fact that as each day goes by, we vaccinate more and more people, that it is conceivable that if that curve keeps going down, 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 and stays down, that we could have a pretty good chance of having a baseball season that's a full season, that you're going to have people in the stands, maybe not sitting right next to each other. They're going to be public health restrictions like mask wearing and things like that. But even though we have to keep our eye out on these variants that you've read about, you know, these kinds of strains that are prominent in the UK and in South Africa, which replicate and spread, at least the UK one does, more efficiently than the standard virus that we've had in our community. If that takes hold, that could reverse those gains that I'm talking about. So if the gains keep coming and you see it go down, 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 more and more people get vaccinated as we go from March to April to May, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I'm also a realist. And we have to really keep our eye out on what impact those variants might have.
Not trying to draw you into a labor dispute, but you know, earlier this month, Major League Baseball proposed to the union that it delay the start of spring training by about a month and start the season on April 28th. The union said they wanted to start on time. What was your view on what was the optimal time to start spring training and maybe to use the 2021 calendar, possibly with the season leaking over into November in a way that they couldn't last year?
You know, the reason I don't want to, I mean, I'm not going to completely evade your question, but I'm going to tell you why I'm reluctant to give you specifics, because then I become the person who's either siding with the players who want a full season. I know I've spoken to the Players Association or to the leaders of the executive component of the league, and I've spoken to them. They all, you know, they make sense. They all have their issues that they want to do. The only thing that I can say is that the lower the level of infection, the more people get vaccinated, the less the risk. But one has to make, and that's where I leave it to the Players Association and the executives, leaders of the league to work that out, because it's a relative risk. It's how much risk are you willing to take? Risk for the safety of the players and the personnel, risk to maybe people who will be coming to the ballpark, depending upon what kind of a capacity seating arrangement, how much capacity are you going to allow? All of those things, I think, can be worked out. But I just don't want to get into something where I'm going to be indirectly the person who comes down one way or the other in a labor dispute. I just, you know, the last time we were there, I mentioned that was joking with the Players Association that, you know, Max Scherzer was on the Zoom with us. You know, and I was joking around saying the last thing in the world I want to do is to get Max Scherzer pissed off at me, because he's such a hero to anybody who's an avid Nats fan the way I am. So I prefer to stay out of those kind of conflicts.
Knowing what you know about the rollout of the vaccine, how quickly do you think that the vaccines could be available to ballplayers?
Well, you know, the problem with that is that most of the ball players, I mean, the overwhelming majority of the ball players, are young, healthy individuals with no underlying conditions. Now, I'm sure that there are going to be ball players who have diseases like diabetes and maybe some with some autoimmune disease that the public doesn't know about, nor should they know about, who actually would fall under the 1C category, which is those who have underlying conditions, but who are young. If you really want to wait to when the people who actually have nothing wrong with them are young and have no priority, because, you know, when the advisory committee came out, they get a 1A, 1B, 1C. 1A was healthcare workers and individuals in nursing homes. 1B were people who were past a certain age, as well as essential members of society that keep society running. Then only when you get to the next level are people with underlying conditions, are people who are who are in other categories. And then finally, when you get out, you get to everybody who is otherwise healthy. So it may not be a few months before, according to the recommendation of the CDC and their advisory committee, it may not be for a few months before they are essentially told, okay, it's open season, let's go and get your vaccine. But remember, an important thing, that if one practices really good safety measures, which we see can be done with sports, particularly sports that are primarily conducted outside, that you don't really have to have everybody vaccinated. You'd love to get everybody vaccinated, and we're working really hard to get everybody who can and wants to be vaccinated in this country vaccinated as quickly as you possibly can. The only trouble that we have is that we have currently a big gap between the supply and the demand. The demand is much greater than the supply. So if we had all of the vaccine that we needed right now, we could do mass vaccinations and we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
If you were invited into one of these spring training meetings in the clubhouses and there were players in there who were reluctant to get vaccinated, what would you tell them?
Well, I would, first of all, not criticize them for their reluctance. I would ask them and try to engage in a you know, even back and forth, not talking down to them at all, saying, why is it that you're reluctant? And let's go through the 1, 2, 3 points. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, I've had discussions with athletes. They're very concerned about their health. I mean, that's their livelihood, you know, their physical health. And I try to convince them by saying, give me the reasons why you think that you have hesitancy. And say, well, you know, it went too fast. I've heard that it takes years to develop a vaccine. You guys just found out about this virus in January of 2020. And then all of a sudden you're sticking vaccines into people in December of 2020. I mean, how could that possibly be? Well, then you explain that that speed has nothing to do with compromising safety. It is completely a reflection of the extraordinary advances that have been made scientifically over the previous 10 years to get to the point where now you could do things in months that normally would have taken years. The next most common one, and this is the one that a lot of people say, well, wait a minute, you're saying it's safe and effective. How do I know that's true? Is that the federal government just, you know, typically telling us something that isn't true? Or is it the company just trying to make a lot of money? You say, okay, let's go through the steps of how you determine something is safe and effective. And in the Moderna one and the Pfizer one, Moderna was 30,000 people in a clinical trial, and then the Pfizer was 44,000. The decision that something is safe and effective was not made by the company, was not made by the president, was made by an independent data and safety monitoring board that is beholden to nobody, not to the government or to the company. It's an independent group made up of scientists, clinicians, immunologists, statisticians, ethicists. They look at the data, and if they say, this looks really good, which they did, then the company presents the data to the FDA and says, can we get approval to distribute it? The FDA makes that decision in consultation with yet again another independent advisory committee. So the entire process is both transparent and independent. And you know, Buster, most people don't appreciate that. They think it's kind of behind closed doors decision-making. That's not the case at all. I mean, if I thought the vaccine was unsafe, I wouldn't have taken it myself. I did. I wouldn't have recommended to the president and the vice president to take it. And they did take it. So we're pretty confident that we're dealing with a safe and effective vaccine. And what I would tell the players is that since your career is so dependent on the health of your body, you know, and your mind, the one thing you don't want to do is that even though most young people, and you've got to admit it, it's true, most young healthy people don't get symptoms at all. They do just fine, or they get mild symptoms. But a certain percentage of them do get symptoms, and some of them have symptoms that last. You know, they may not be in bed, but they just don't feel as good as they should feel. And, you know, when you're playing Major League Baseball, you got to be at the top of your game all the time. You don't need me to tell you that. So I would advise the players who are reluctant to get vaccinated to say, you know, it's best for you, your health, and ultimately your career.
Last one for you. You mentioned before the idea of fans returning to stands. When do you think that we might ever see that time when you get 40,000 people crowded in a ballpark, shoulder to shoulder, bumping as you did, I'm sure, during the 2019 World Series into other folks in the concourse?
Well, again, Buster, it's difficult to give an exact date because it's contingent on certain things falling into place. If we vaccinate 70 to 85% of the population and we get what's called herd immunity, and these variants don't give us much of a problem, and the level of infection is way, way down in the general population, that the virus really doesn't have any place to go because most people are protected, then at that point, I think you'll be able to do what you're talking about. Whether that's going to be in the 2021 season or not, I don't know. Unlikely you're going to be completely normal, I would have to be honest with you. I mean, I'd like to see the season being played. I don't think it's going to be absolutely the way it was before. But, you know, it might. Again, I tend not to give a date because the next day I see it's all of a sudden in the New York Times that I predicted something, which I'm not, because I don't know the answer.
All right, Dr. Fauci. Well, I appreciate your time. Again, thanks for your service.
Thank you. Always good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Alan Gonzalez covers baseball for ESPN, and you get the first crack at this Fernando Tatis Jr. contract, Alan, in terms of the reaction around the sport. I've heard a wide range. I'm curious about what you've heard.
Everybody that I spoke to about it was just completely stunned about it, Buster. You know, there were a lot of concerns that I heard from people about the Padres' sort of sustainability long-term with this, and not to sort of throw a wet blanket on it, but it's a real thing that I heard from a lot of people. This is an organization whose record high in payroll before this year was about $105 million 6 years ago, and they're going to exceed $180 million. But for me personally, Buster, I don't see this contract as anything other than a triumph for that organization. I mean, to do what they've done over the last few years to capitalize on that young nucleus, to swing all those trades and maintain what's a really good farm system. And what they did with Fernando Tatis Jr. is something that we would love to see throughout the industry. They brought him up when he was ready. They didn't worry about any service time manipulation. They knew that they had a transcendent talent on their hands. And what they did was just try to bring as much talent, impact talent around him as possible. And regarding the Padres' financial landscape, there were concerns about their sustainability that exist outside of this extension. I don't think this extension really does anything to alter that because, okay, maybe there's a bit of a signing bonus that sort of costs them some money up front. But the only thing that they really did here was just attain some cost certainty for a player who's going to be really expensive through the arbitration process. So now they know exactly what they're going to be able to pay him. And if nothing else, they have some flexibility with him for those free agent years. If for some reason it doesn't work out, like we see teams sort of trade away these contracts all the time. But me personally, I heard, and I'm sure you did the same, I heard a lot of mixed reactions about it, some concern about the Padres' future. I can't help but look at this, Buster, as just an overwhelming positive for that organization and just sort of what it represents about who they are and who they could potentially be.
Yeah, some of the executives of the teams that I spoke with wondered about the risk for a small market slash big market team or mid-market team with a player guaranteed that much money at age 22. You know, I had one executive say to me sort of laughingly, why didn't they just give him 20 years? Feeling like that for the Padres, they go out on a limb. But I know from talking with Padres people, they feel like this contract might actually turn out to be a bargain because they believe in the player so much. And I think especially after the adjustments he made going into 2021, as you know, last offseason, they actually talked to the Cleveland Indians about Francisco Lindor because there were a lot of questions about whether or not Fernando Tatis Jr. could stay at shortstop. And he was challenged by the staff to work on his defense. And guess what? He completely cleaned it up. You know, Paul Embiidkidis sent me this great stat about effectively defensive efficiency, outs in the zone. He was one of the worst shortstops in baseball in 2019. And in 2020, he was the best. Like, he got a lot better. He applied that athleticism. And the folks in the Padres organization, I think, feel like, look, we know how good of an offensive player he is. And if he's a good defensive shortstop, using that athleticism, having locked down all those defensive mistakes, then this is someone who could be a great player going forward. Now, you mentioned sustainability. Other teams look at a situation like a Nolan Arenado with the Rockies, you know, small market, mid-market team, that in the end, that contract just probably is too big for that market. And when I covered the Padres in 93-94, they had a bunch of stars, and ownership got very scared about having to pay all those players, so they dumped a lot of them. But I'm beginning to wonder, and I've asked executives of other teams this, do you think that Peter Seidler, who's the owner of the Padres, might be like the new version of Mike Ilitch? You know, he was the Tigers owner who for years, he ran his team differently than any other team. He didn't worry about the bottom line. He didn't worry about making profit. He just wanted to put together a good baseball team and give his city a chance to win the World Series.
Yeah, and you got to admire just sort of doing this in the financial landscape that we're in, where you're basically going to have back-to-back years of just almost the entirety of them with no fans in the stands. But I think the Padres are banking on just that market rallying around that team, and especially just with the Chargers no longer being there, with the Padres being the only professional sport in town. You know, one thing that I've heard ever dating back to just the Manny Machado contract was just the Padres being to San Diego what like the Trailblazers are in Portland, what the Spurs are in San Diego, the Cardinals to St. Louis, maybe a little bit lesser a version of that. But Buster, I'll never forget, like, I remember being there a couple of years ago when you started to sense sort of the ascension of this roster. There was some excitement around this team. This was like April 2019. And I remember just sort of spending a couple of days down in Gaslamp and just the excitement around that city, just that the Padres were finally relevant and they had a sustainable future. And who better to just sort of bank that on than somebody like Tatis? I mean, people talk about how long this contract is. He's 22 years old, okay? And I remember when the Angels were negotiating with Mike Trout that first pre-arbitration extension that he signed, they wanted to do something like this. This was something that they talked about with Craig Landis's agent. It was either a contract that was going to make him a free agent before he was 30 years old, or it was going to be a lifetime contract. They were never able to figure it out. But if Tatis just continues on this path that he is very clearly on, you know, who knows what will happen. But if he continues on this path, you're right, Buster, you said it earlier, it's going to be a bargain in those free agent years because he would be at free agent age at around his mid-20s. So this is great for them. You're absolutely right about Tatis improving defensively. I remember a conversation I had with Manny Machado last year. And one thing that he talked about watching Fernando Tatis closely was his focus pitch to pitch as a shortstop just increased significantly last year. He was in on every pitch. And I think that's a big reason why you saw him sort of taking it to the next level with his defense.
And keep in mind, when it comes to payroll, a lot of times, and right now the baseball labor landscape is really ugly. At some point, the players in Major League Baseball will work out a deal. And what typically, historically has happened is in the aftermath of that, you see tremendous growth in payrolls and salaries. And so while Tatis Jr.'s contract looks big in the current context, when that next CBA is signed, whatever the contents are, that contract might look a lot more affordable after that deal's done. 30 seconds on this. No question. Padres-Dodgers, best rivalry in baseball right now?
No question about it. So many different storylines with that, too. You look at Trevor Bauer and Manny Machado, their history. Manny Machado's own Trevor Bauer. You look at Blake Snell pitching in the World Series in Game 6. It started to get chippy last year between Trent Grisham and Clayton Kershaw, Machado and Bruce Dar Gratterall. Cody Bellinger robbing Fernando Tatis Jr., there's no better rivalry right now, and I think it'll be that way for the next at least like 3 years.
And last one, I want to say so long to Tim Tebow, who announced earlier this week that his career is over. Alan, I really feel like, and look, I was as critical of this as anybody when he started, because I didn't like the idea that anyone would pretend that he was a big-time major league prospect. And I think initially that was sort of the vibe. People were sort of pretending that he was actually a legitimate major league prospect. But you know what? I think his time in baseball was really positive for the sport. He conducted himself in a first-class manner, as you would expect. He drew a lot of eyes to the sport. He was a terrific teammate by all accounts, and a lot of fans went to see him. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we continue. We did this with Michael Jordan to a greater extent, but I think we continually discount how difficult it is to just pick up baseball like that. And everything that I heard from people who covered Tim Tebow, aside from all the criticism he might have gotten from the outside, the way he carried himself every day and just the real desire to actually get this right was sort of genuine with him. And it's not his fault that his name carries what it does and that he got these opportunities because of who he was. Everybody I talked to who covered him said that he put in the work and he was a good person and he tried to do the best he could and it just didn't work out.
Alan, thanks for doing this. Great to talk with you.
Thank you, Buster.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Kevin Cash is starting his seventh season. Kevin, can you believe it? As manager of the Tampa Bay Rays that you've been managing for that long?
No, I can't. I'm just fortunate to get to work with a great front office, great ownership, and probably as important as anything, really good players. So good players can help keep a manager around, I guess.
So we were just talking with Dr. Fauci. I'm curious about, from your perspective, how, as you guys begin spring training this year, how it compares this time this week to the beginning of July last year as you guys were getting ramped up. What's similar and what's different?
Well, I think we're a little more informed as an industry, and hopefully certainly as the Rays. We're more informed. We're a little bit better equipped, more prepared to follow some of the protocols, guidelines that are being put in place to keep us healthy and definitely our fans and communities healthy. Saying that, I think it's fair. We all wish we were probably in a little bit better place, that these protocols would have lessened. They haven't yet. I think a lot of people have instructed or insinuated that there is some you know, light shining on the horizon with the vaccine out. But until more information is out there and more opportunities for the vaccine are out there, I think we owe it to ourselves and everybody involved that we're going to do everything we can to keep our players safe, keep the game moving, and follow the protocols that are being put in place.
Kevin, I've known you for a while, and I feel a weariness with that whole part of it, maybe a longing on your part to just get back to a point where you don't have to worry about that.
That's fair. I mean, I think after the World Series last year, I probably made some offhand comments about being over wearing the mask. And, you know, as simple as that is, definitely poor judgment by me. But it was just hoping. It was trying to be optimistic, like we would be better. And, you know, look, today's game is really tough. It's really tough on these players. The influence of social media, the internet, just the information that is out there, that's one thing. Then you bring in a pandemic and we're trying to compete at a high level and do right. This is something none of us have been a part of other than a brief time in 2020. So it is challenging, but we owe it to the players to keep a positive attitude, keep doing it, and kind of lead the right way.
I asked Dr. Fauci about when he foresees a time when you're going to see fans in the stands. As someone who's in the game, how much are you dying for that?
We all are. We missed our fans. There's no doubt about it. We were so excited to just be playing the game. Once we hit spring training 2.0 and get ready for opening day. But that opening day in 2020 was like no other, and not in a good way. It was just different. You can pipe in all the noise you want. When you don't see fans in the stands and bodies and families cheering you on or booing you, whatever it is, it creates energy. And I think a lot of this game is played off energy, and our fans provide that. And I can't wait till there's clearance that they're able to come back in whatever capacity.
I felt like I underestimated the impact of no fans in the stands. And then I thought about it, you know, from perspective of other performers, if Robert De Niro was acting out a part in his living room and there was nobody there, it would be completely different than if he was in front of a camera or on a stage someplace.
I think you're exactly right. And we see so many in our game that feed off adrenaline. And you know, you see it with some of these high octane relievers that come in the game and how pumped up they are to come up in a game in a big high leverage moment situation. I mean, adrenaline is what helps get them there a lot. I mean, there's a reason why pitchers throw bullpens at 90, but then when they get in the game, they're throwing at 98, and the fans add to that. So it's a component that was missed. Greatly missed, and hopefully we're in the right direction of getting to welcome them back with huge open arms.
So you guys made the World Series last year. You played 108 win pace in the regular season. The year before that, 96 win pace. The year before, or 96 wins. The year before that, 90 wins. And I've seen projections for you guys, 88 wins, 91 wins. And you know, it's not personal. A lot of it is statistical projections. What do those systems miss about you guys, do you think?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I think you certainly have to respect them, because the people and the companies that are putting those projections together are very intelligent, very smart, and have a lot of information. Certainly there's intangibles there that we would value. We love our players, and we can see way more good than the negatives in them. And I think what's been special about this group is how they have come together with the focus on and the emphasis of finding ways to win each night. And regardless of what took place the night before, the mindset goes right back to where it should have been come the first inning the following day. And when you have that mindset and the willingness to sacrifice at times and understand for the greater good of the team, there's got to be some buy-in so we can try to get the right matchups, put guys in the right spots to succeed. Maybe sometimes these projections overlook that. I don't have the best answer.
So the Rays are always in a position where they're going to have to manage payroll. And this offseason, Snell gets traded to the Padres. Charlie Morton moves on as a free agent. You as a manager, when spring training opens, this is not new for you, talking to your players about those type of transactions. How do you turn the page after big names move like that?
Well, you have to turn the page some way, but I think we owe it to Blake and Charlie both for what they meant to our organization. Blake being a guy that has, you know, from scouting to player development to Cy Youngs to helping us get to the World Series, win in the World Series, all of those things. Pretty impressive resume that he's created as a Tampa Bay Ray, and we wish him nothing but the best. Charlie, I don't know if you could ask a pitcher that had a bigger two-year impact on our organization at the major league level. You're not going to find a more stand-up quality person, teammate, and performer on the mound. Like you said, though, you do have to find a way to acknowledge this is how we're going to work, how we're going to stay competitive, and we got to do a good job of being honest and talking and communicating with the players that are still here on why we make some of the decisions that we do. And I think that's what makes our front office so special. They care so much. Eric Neander, Pete Bendix, Carlos Rodriguez, and then certainly, you know, Matt Silverman, Brian Alden, our owner Stu, they play a huge role in it, and they get out in front of it. And when you can give honest information and recognize and acknowledge those are tough decisions, and sometimes they don't feel very good for a while, and I don't know if they'll ever feel good, but we acknowledge it and we just try to express ourselves how much we care about the guys in the building right now.
Last one for you. Joe Torre told me that one of his favorite parts about reaching the World Series was in the aftermath, hearing from peers. You managed the furthest you've ever managed to getting through Game 6 of the World Series. What was that like to hear from peers after that was over?
You know, other than family, direct family, it meant a lot. You know, the World Series was awesome. It was a huge positive, something that I hope we all cherish for the rest of our careers. There's no denying Game 6 was tough, and the amount of support that came from peers, other managers, other coaches, former teammates reaching out, it meant a lot and helped, you know, get those tough weeks out of the way a little sooner.
All right, Kevin. Thanks for doing this, and I'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, Buster. Looking forward to it.
Dave Roberts is the World Series winning manager of the reigning champion Los Angeles Dodgers. Dave, how does that sound?
Oh, man, it sounds perfect, like it was meant to be. It just rolled off your tongue. I could get used to that. And it's funny, as we've had our second day of pitchers and catchers, but just having that, you know, you revisiting that, it certainly brings a smile to my face.
So Joe Torre, when I covered him as manager of the Yankees, said that the greatest time after winning a World Series or even being in a World Series was in the offseason following spring training when you'd run into peers. Tell me some cool texts, some cool phone calls you shared after winning the World Series.
So I will argue that being in the World Series and winning the World Series is completely different. So I would argue that for Joe Torre to say that being in the World Series and then the following year not winning it, I've been there twice. But no, just all kidding aside, it is certainly great. The winner, I totally understand his point. And to get texts from Cito, Gaston, you know, professional athletes, other managers to congratulate me and say we're doing things the right way. Mike Krzyzewski, I did a podcast with him, and that's somebody that, you know, when you talk to Coach K and he's complimenting you on leadership and what your organization has done, that's a wow moment for me. But I definitely look forward to kind of seeing my peers, certainly.
Tell me your favorite conversation in a follow-up with one of your players after it was all settled. Because, of course, when you win the World Series, it's crazy. You guys had the whole thing right at the end with Justin Turner. And I'm sure at some point in the offseason, you get a chance to catch up with you know, some veterans.
You know what? I just actually had one today on the field with Austin Barnes. And he caught that last strikeout from Urias. And we just kind of embraced each other today. And he looked at me and goes, man, isn't it really cool that we did it? And we really did it. And that's just one of those things where I just appreciate where we're working towards 21, but to still have that one-on-one moment, that one-off, and just reflect a little bit. But Clayton Avice and myself, we've shared it. And I've shared that with a lot of our guys. So like you said, we didn't really get that celebration after winning the World Series. So the first day of pitches and catch is going to be my first time really to get in front of the group and the guys that were here last year to congratulate them, because I really didn't get that opportunity.
What kind of input have you had on the championship rings?
So very little. But I have fortune enough to get a sneak peek, and from Mark Walter, the owners, to Stan Kasten, Lon Rose, and all these guys that had input, they did a fantastic job. It's detailed. They nailed it. And so I will say a World Series ring is supposed to be over the top, and ours is sort of over the top.
How is this spring training going to feel different now that you guys, because it year after year after year, the challenge was pushing the rock back up the hill after it fell down on you. How is it going to be different for you in sort of preparing for 21 because you guys did win?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple things, you know, in the idea, the mindset of having to push the rock back up the mountain, having a chip, the edge to win a championship. I think for me is the messaging is, there's certain things that we've done the right way and process and how we've gone about things to continue to do those things. Also, I think that the target on our backs, when you wear this uniform, there's always going to be people that want to beat you. But I think that after being a world champion, the target gets a little bit bigger, and that's something that we've earned. we've earned that bullseye. And the other part of it is appreciating the fact that in Major League Baseball, it's very hard to repeat. The Yankees were the last team to repeat. And there's always kind of narratives on why we couldn't get it done the following year from various teams. And I just want to get ahead of it. And I want our guys to understand that.
Trevor Bauer winds up signing with you guys, one of the big deals of this winter. What was your role in that? And what conversations did you have with him, you know, whether it was just before he signed, as he's going through the process, or after he signed?
As far as getting the deal done, I had no part. I do take credit, and I do appreciate the fact that when he vetted opponents, former Dodgers, coaches, there were glowing reviews on how we do things as an organization. So I do feel I had something to do with that. This is a guy that was a Dodger fan as a kid, and he really wanted to come back home and pitch for his hometown team. So I'm just happy as a manager that it kind of both sides came to an agreement. And seeing Trevor here around the guys in camp, you can just see his excitement.
You have longstanding ties to the San Diego Padres, to San Diego. What was it like to watch them as a division rival do all their work this winter?
I think it's great for baseball. I really do. And I applaud Peter Seidler, the organization, AJ Preller. You know, they've done a nice job with the farm system, going out there and spending money and, you know, extending Tatis and getting free agents and doing what they've done. I think me as a Southern California guy, an NL West guy, I think it's great. I think for baseball, you know, when you can see what Yu Darvish did, what Blake Snell did to get those guys on the West Coast, Tatis is a once-in-a-generation type player, to lock him up, I think it's great for baseball. I will stand by the fact that I really don't concern myself with the Padres or any other team. I think that, you know, the most important thing for me, the Dodgers, is to focus on ourselves and how we prepare and how we play.
That said, you did participate in some of the great rivalries in baseball. You played in the Yankees Red Sox rivalry with Boston. You played in the Giants Dodger rivalry. How would you assess where you guys are with the Padres right now? Because I know, as an observer, someone in the sport, those are the games I'm looking forward to the most this year.
Yeah, and I think that we should. And I think that fans, you know, people in the media should, because you're talking about two very good teams geographically that are very close. But I still believe, though, for me, being a part of the Red Sox, Yankees, the Dodgers, Giants, I mean, this is over decades and generations. So I think that I absolutely understand the desire for it to be a rivalry. But I still think that, you know, longevity certainly matters. But in real time, where we're at right now, it's going to be a fun, you know, back and forth, you know, Pods versus the Dodgers.
You mentioned Fernando Tatis Jr. getting that big contract. What are you seeing him as a young player?
Oh, man, he is what young players, baseball is all about. You know, I could see myself, if I was a young kid, he would be one of my favorite players. He plays a game the way it's supposed to be played. He plays it hard. He plays every game like it's his last game. He's a very intelligent young man. So now you take the cerebral side to the talent, the skill set. He's just kind of the old school, the new school swag type. So I don't like having to see him 18, 19 times in the same division, but I can appreciate the talent.
Dave, thanks for doing this. It's always great to talk with you.
All right, Buster. Take care.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for this glorious Friday here. First up, we got Eric Sorensen at Coach Sorensen 9. He writes in, "Hey, Buster, what are you most looking forward to this season? And what trips to cover games are you most looking forward to? I think everyone wants to know what you're going to be up to this season. Why don't you tell the people?"
I tell you what, I am looking forward to traveling again. I don't know when that's going to happen in terms of getting on a plane. I'm hoping the second half of the season at this point. I do know if there's a game in the Eastern Seaboard, I live here in New York, so I would drive to Citi Field, or I drive to Yankee Stadium or to Washington for that first game that we're going to have. Maybe drive to Boston or Philadelphia. But I'm looking forward to, like I think a lot of people, Dodgers, Padres. Those games are going to be awesome this year.
Very excited for that. Corey Rukert is up next at Corey R underscore 12. He writes in, "Major League Baseball won't put the DH in the season, but have been wanting more action in the game for years. Don't pitchers strike out out 40% of their at-bats. Doesn't that seem hypocritical on the part of Major League Baseball?
Yep, agree, Corey. I totally agree with the column that Joel Sherman wrote in the New York Post last week, saying that at some point, Major League Baseball just needs to implement the universal DH. Everyone knows that it's coming eventually. Everybody wants it. Major League Baseball is trying to use it as a negotiating point. But to your point, they're trying to get more action in the game, and you're not going to get it by sending up a bunch of weak hitting pitchers.
Next one, we got Wayne at Mookie for MVP rates. And hey, Buster, is the 7-inning doubleheader rule only here because of COVID? Is it safe to assume it will be gone next season?
No, I think it's going to be here to stay. I think the teams, you know, with what happened last year, now that that precedent's been set, I think that teams, Major League Baseball, the Player Association, are looking for better ways to keep players healthy. And so rather than having doubleheaders be 9-inning games, I think they're going to shorten them to 7-inning games. I think you're going to see runners in second base starting in extra innings, too. Baseball really working against those really, really long games.
Wow. Okay. Much to Tim Kirkchen's chagrin. We will go to Frank at Cinegrades 2 to close out this edition of Bleacher Tweets. He writes, and Buster, I know you were tough on the Orioles earlier this week, but is there a better story in baseball right now than Trey Mancini taking swings again? I say nay. What say you?
Yeah, I was tough on the Orioles because
deservedly.
Right. And it feels like they're going to be irrelevant for another 3-4 years after being irrelevant for the last 3 years. And it just doesn't seem right that teams can check out for that long a period of time and not spend any money. It's absolutely right, though, Frank, your point about Trey Mancini. It's so cool to have him back. I am going to, you know, be efforting to get him on the podcast and talk to him about the journey that he's been on. So great that he's back playing baseball again.
That would be phenomenal. All right, everyone. Thanks for writing in. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Hope you enjoy this episode as it's coming out a little bit later on Friday, but we'll be back in the saddle on Monday every weekday. Tell a friend and do subscribe, rate, and review.
That's it for today. My thanks to Dr. Fauci, Kevin Cash, to Dave Roberts, to Alden, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.